Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, we all know we're in the middle of a housing crisis, but people looking to buy a home, for them, how long, on average, do you have to save before you can buy a place to call your own? Conscious, of course, that people are on social housing lists, some people are renters, and they're not in a position to be saving at the moment. But for those who are, we're joined by Eoin McGee, personal finance expert. Eoin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Colm. How are
you? Thanks for coming in. You've been crunching the numbers for us. Take us through the assumptions, first of all, you've used to come up with the figures you'll be working off today.
Okay, so a couple of things that you have to pull together here. So what I'm trying to get a picture on this is, what's the average person look like in Ireland? What do they look like at the moment from an income, from an expenditure, from a rent? Overall, what does their financial position look like? And before we go into this, what I will say is this is not good news, right? This does not sit well with me. So it's definitely not going to sit well with your listeners as well, because it's really a terrible position that we've been put into and society is now in for people who are trying to get ahead and who are trying to buy a house. So let's just go through the numbers. The average person in Ireland earns €4,242 per month. That's the average earnings, about 50 grand a year, right? That's average. And that turns into after tax €3,350 after tax. And again, I have to make a few assumptions here. When it comes to the cost of living, there's loads of different data and sources that you can pull from. But I picked one that I was very happy with. And it says that a single person spends just over €1,000 a month on their living expenses. And some people are going to gall at that number and say, you cannot live in Ireland for €1,000 a month. But the rent then, we saw a figure last week that came out that for the first time, it's just the average rent in Ireland has just gone over €2,000 to €2,053 per month.
Huge, yeah.
Huge. So if you add those two figures together, you're ending up at little over €3,000 a month is what it's costing you just to rent and to live.
So that's like most of maybe €300 left over.
€294, I think, is the actual number that's left over.
Okay.
So let's go take a step up. So that's on the ground, what's happening on a day-to-day basis. But let's look at the big numbers. The average house price in Ireland is €346,000. That means you need a deposit of 10% for most people, which is €34,600. And you're going to need costs for solicitors and stuff for about €10,000. So let's say you're going to need savings of €45,000. If you take how much we earn on average and how much we spend on average, and you save the difference, to raise the money for a deposit, it's going to take a person 13 years to save at a rate of €294 a month. For the average person to buy the average house on the average salary in Ireland today, it's going to take 13 years to save the deposit.
Assuming the price doesn't go up in that period, 13 years.
Exactly. And that's the big assumption, that prices are exactly the same in 13 years' time as they are today. Now, a couple of things just for people who want to delve into the data. I assumed half of 1% interest, and we're going to look at different interest rates in a few minutes, but I assumed half of 1% interest after tax is what you're getting on your bank account by saving it in there, and it's still taking 13 years.
Okay. So average, you're working off averages here. Obviously, people have, you know, divergent levels of income, but for the purposes of clarity, you're working off averages here. 13 years to save a deposit for the average house across Ireland. So what about cities and what that looks like? Run us through that.
So I looked at a couple of different areas. I picked North County Dublin. So Dublin's generally in these reports is split up into a couple of different areas. I picked North County Dublin because it was the highest growing in Dublin last year, grow by just over 15% in the last 12 months, the price of housing. And in North County Dublin now, it's going to take you 15 years and 4 months because you're going to need a deposit plus costs of 52,000. Dublin city centre grew the least last year, and it still grew by 9% or just under 9% last year. And it's 14 years and 10 months there.
Okay, that's you're looking at a price because it's 405,000 euro average price of a house in Dublin city centre.
Absolutely, yeah. And North County Dublin is 420. Now, if I went to South Dublin, it'd be even more miserable, where it's the most expensive in Dublin. But if we go down to Cork, let's not forget outside of Dublin, because it's not all about Dublin. If we go down to Cork, you're still at 13.5 years in Cork City. And in Galway City, you're back to 15 years again.
And the price house there higher than Dublin city centre.
Absolutely, yeah. House prices in Galway City now are averaging €409,000.
And how long again for Galway?
15 years. That's a lot. So if you think about it, let's put that in perspective. If you're 22, let's say, coming out of college, and you want to buy in Galway, let's say you went to college in Galway and you loved it and you wanted to buy in Galway. If you start saving that day and you're average the whole way through, you're talking about 37 before you're ready to buy a house.
Okay, and you're basing that off the living expenses figure, what people have left over. So what's reasonable living expenses?
Okay, so what I did then was, so I picked the numbers and then I looked and I said, hold on a second, right? So there's lots of sources of data to tell us what our average living expenditure is. But anyone who's ever had a problem with a bank, right, and has a problem with a loan, they go through this process where they look at everything they own, they earn, they eat and they spend and everything else. They look at all of their finances. But the bank also makes an assumption of what's agreed between all of the banks is the reasonable living expenses. Okay, and reasonable living expenses is what the banks have determined is for a single person, the reasonable cost of living is €1,433 per month. Okay, now that's agreed amongst the banks. So if you're in trouble with a loan, what happens is they say, yeah, you need €1,433 a month to live your life, plus your rent or your overheads for whatever mortgage or rent.
And the rest has to pay the debt down.
Yeah, it goes off the debt, okay. Right? So if you take their numbers, now remember, you'd imagine, I don't want to sound too cynical, but you'd imagine if they're pushing for the numbers, they're pushing them down as best they can, so there's more left over to cover the loan that they want repaid, right? But €1,433 added to the average rent of €2,053, okay, when you add those two numbers together, you don't have any money left over after the average salary. So on those numbers, the irony of it is you could never get the deposit together for a house if you were using the bank's reasonable living expenditure numbers.
Okay.
And what I'm saying, like, I'm really conscious. I'm throwing these numbers out here. I'm throwing 13 years of someone's life or 15 years of someone's life is going to be committed to try and get a house. It's a horrible situation that we've been left in. And ultimately, there's only one way to fix this. And it's a complete societal shift, in my opinion. But the problem here is supply.
Okay, but I mean, to strike a semi-optimistic or hopeful note, that €2,000 may be shared across a number of people in a flat share. And if you're buying a house, you may be going in with somebody else. So,
And I think that's the point I'm trying to get across here, right? If there's any positive in it at all. If you're on your own, it is considerably harder. Like, it's much harder to buy. If you're in a couple, things, the dynamic starts to change.
It's not easy.
It's absolutely not easy. No, without question, it's not easy. But what you do need to realise is that there's a whole pile of stuff that's outside of your control here, and which means there's more responsibility on us as individuals to take control of the stuff that we can control. The other thing is, it's not a level playing field, Colin. Like, it's absolutely not. If you look at, we don't have actual...
Well, background and family wealth is huge, isn't
massive.
It?
Massive. Like, if you think about it, right? We've stats from the UK where there's a suggestion in the UK that 90% of first-time buyers get help from Bank of Mum and Dad. Okay, in Ireland, I don't have similar stats, but what we do know is first-time buyers last year only got on average 80% or a little bit less than 80% loan to value. And now what that means is they were able to come up with a 20% deposit for the house. Now, if you combine that with the stats I've just given you and the figures I've just given you, there has to be an outside source helping.
Some
and
of
it's
them
not
might
a leap.
Be COVID savers, but it's reasonable to assume that some coming from a better off background or whose parents have possibly taking out equity in their own house.
Yes. Are getting a helping hand. And our figures are slightly less here compared to those UK numbers. But it's not surprising. Like, if you think about how hard it is, you're looking at your son or your daughter's looking at 13 years or 15 years, depending on where they're living. And we have 156 billion sitting on deposit right now. The Irish people, not companies, the Irish people have a lot of money sitting in bank accounts. And if you're a parent sitting there looking at your child struggling and really wanting to help them out, it's not surprising. And again, it's not their fault.
Right. I mean, look, when it was easy to get a mortgage between kind of the late 90s up to the crash, people from, you know, people now currently in their 60s, 70s, 80s were going, oh, the 80s, you should have seen the 80s. You couldn't get a bank. You couldn't get a mortgage off a bank. And, you know, interest rates were huge. So is it easier now to buy a house than the bad old days of the 80s that grandparents' generation came from?
If you got your house in the 80s and you're thinking today that it was harder on you than it is on the people today, I'm sorry, you're wrong. OK, let me give you some figures on that. Right. Back in the 80s. And well, there was a piece of research done in 2022 that showed us back in the 80s, a couple would spend 17.4% of their disposable income covering the mortgage. OK, even though interest rates were very high, it was still 17.4%. Today, the average is 25.8% for a couple. OK, so we're spending more. So that means back in the 80s, for every €100 you had coming in after tax, you were spending €17 on your mortgage. Today, it's €25 on your mortgage. The other one to look at is back in 1987, the average house cost 1.7 times the average income.
Okay. So you could get one on a single income.
Yeah. Today, 7 times. Okay. So you're talking about 7 times the income. It's just completely out of kilter. And then I suppose the other big thing is availability.
Supply.
So we should, in a healthy circumstance, have somewhere around 5% of, we have about 2 million houses in Ireland. We should have about 5% of them for sale at any given time. Just natural turnover. We've had less than 1% of houses available on the market for quite some time now. And it's just the supply is so cut. And that's the point I was making a minute ago. If we magicked 320,000 units, and what I mean by unit is an apartment or a house, they're both a unit. If we magicked 320,000 units today, we would meet today's demand. And we'd just meet what's available. But if you think about it, even if I think back to my leaving cert, there were 67,000 people did their leaving cert the year I did my leaving cert. And that means for me in my head, rough maths, there's probably 70, 80,000 people a year who are maybe turning 30, 31, 32, which is the average age for buying a house now. And they are now looking to buy and they are adding to that 320,000. Now, I'm not politically aligned in any way and I put my hand up, but all of the government parties before the election last year talked about we are going to build 50,000 houses a year. Do you see how the maths just don't work? We need to magic 320,000 and we need to meet demand of 60 to 80,000 a year, and they're all promising us 50,000 houses a year. It's not good enough and we need more supply to fix this problem.
Okay, so for somebody who's listening right now, I mean, we did mention, you know, that 2,000 figure for rent, the likelihood is that's been shared between, you know, a couple of people in a rental property. So there might be some leeway there where they do have a bit of room to save, notwithstanding the cost of living and everything else. I think we've established that it definitely isn't easy. But in terms of what somebody can do on the personal finance front, which is your forte, what can they do?
Okay, so you're right to talk about the rent first, right? If you're paying rent, the reality is usually a person's most expensive thing in their life is rent or the roof over their head. For some people, then childcare comes up second, a very quick second. But what I would say here is that the maths come down to, if I'm working on €300 a month, it's taking on average 13 years to get there. If you can double that, so say your rent isn't at €2,000 a month, and say you're sharing with someone and it's €1,000 a month, you should be able to put significantly more into savings. But if you double the 300 to 600, it's not 13 years, it's 6.5 years. If you can triple it, you're reducing the term down again. And this is the important thing, and this is the positive side of this. If you stay average is not going to be good enough for you if you're on your own and you're rowing your own boat and you're going to have to wait the 13 years.
But I mean, at the same time, you know, financial advisors would say it's a no-brainer to put money into a pension because there's a massive, you know, for people who are earning at the marginal rate of tax, 41% government funded discount, you'd need your head examined not to do it. And yet, if you want to buy a house, that money has to go into funding the house.
Yeah. And one of the things that I'm very, very cautious of, and this is not blanket advice, but one of the things I would say to people when they're in this stage of their life, when they're trying to build, it's an amazing time to be able to build money up in a pension because compound interesting and everything else, you get more in your 20s, it'll make a massive difference later on. I would strongly encourage that the habit of putting money into pension, getting the maximum out of your employer, is really important. So people often have a match. If you put in 3%, I put in 3%, says the employer. And you need to take advantage of that at the very least. Putting extra in at the moment while you've got this elephant in the room, which is I want to buy a house, you need to get some advice about your specific circumstances to get that balance right. But I'm certainly not saying don't do pension at all.
If you were to look at, because, you know, saving for a pension also helps your credit rating if you're going to look for a mortgage. So that thing you mentioned, that the banks have a guide or a view of what are reasonable living expenses, is that available anywhere? And is that a guide to how you might live or what you might spend your money on?
What I would say here is the most important thing from a bank's perspective when they're looking at you for a mortgage is, do you prove your ability to repay? Mm. And what that means is, if the mortgage is, let me keep the maths really simple. If the mortgage is €1,000 a month, go onto a Google calculator and work out what is 4.5 times my salary. So if my salary is, again, to keep the math simple, €100,000 a year, 4.5 times that is 450. That's probably your ability to borrow. That's how much money you could borrow based on central bank rules. But if you look at what the repayment is on that, Google, how much does €450,000 a month cost on a mortgage over 30 years? And it'll give you the number. But let's imagine that number was €1,000 a month. You should be able to show that between rent and savings, you can save around €1,400 a month, 400 or 1.4 times what the mortgage repayment is going to be. Now, people can often get caught up then with, oh, but what if I'm spending on this and what if I'm expending? Are they going to give out to me for going on holidays? Should I not go on holidays for 3 years beforehand? No. Like, in my opinion, if you can show, there's my savings, if you're still living at home, you can show their savings of €1,400 a month consistently on the mortgage of 1,000. Now, if the mortgage is 2,000, you need to be looking at 1.4 times that. So you need to work out your own maths on it. But if you can show ability to repay 1.4 times. Now, if you are renting, let's say in that example, your rent is €900 a month and you want to prove 1,400, you pay the rent of 900 and you save 500. That's proving ability to be able to afford €1,400 a month, right? And their mortgage only going to be 1,000. Beyond that, provided you're not putting betting through your account, which they don't like, right? So they will often look at betting accounts and say, oh, if they're willing to bet with their own money, will they be willing to bet with mine? And they'll be slow on that. Now, before the betting companies text in and say, that's not true, the banks won't automatically decline you if you've got a betting account going through your bank account, okay? But what they often will use as an excuse if they want to decline you for other reasons.
Okay, all things being equal, it may be an influencing factor. I mean, you do hear people in other jurisdictions who maybe try and improve their earnings by taking on other income. I mean, everybody has to make a judgment about work-life balance and family commitments and those kind of things. I mean, there's a number of things outside of people's control. Is looking at that an extra source of income something that should be considered?
Well, there's two reasons why I wanted to talk to you about this piece this morning. One is, hopefully someone in the Dáil is listening to us and other people who have more influence on these things actually sits up and says 15 years, 13 years is just not fair. And and I know people are trying to tackle this. But more from people's perspective, from listeners, individual listeners' perspective, what I'm hoping is that people are realising average isn't good enough. It's not going to get you there. And I say that with absolute sympathy for people's situations. And I don't mean to be average not good enough. You need to be better. But anything you can do to make you better than average is right. Going to make an improvement for your personal circumstance, which you can control. And ultimately what this comes down to is you can control your expenditure. And some people can control their income, okay? So the thing you have most control over is your expenditure. And I hate going after that, because if there's a way that you can keep your lifestyle the way it is and earn more money with a side hustle, with a sticking your head down and going for that promotion, with a something, even maybe further education that gets you the job you really want in a year or two after the education. If there's something you can do on the income side that can improve it, that is more empowering and a much more positive way of tackling this than trying to cut your coffees out.
Yeah, sure. It does have that kind of echo, though, of, you know, those stories you hear in America, my mom or my pop worked 3 jobs to do X, Y, and Z. Mm. And, you know, it comes at a cost to people's time with their families and the like.
Absolutely. But can I just say on that? Sometimes the people say, oh, I've got this job and I'm going to do a side hustle or I'm going to get a second job and I'm going to earn more money by that. Really have a conversation with yourself before you take on a second job and ask yourself, if I took the energy I'm going to put into that second job and put it into my primary job, is there more opportunity for myself in that job?
But have a clear and explicit chat with your boss whether 100%. That's going to deliver and let them know you want to work towards a particular point, I suppose. Just, I mean, look, financially, we know people are moving to the Gulf, tax-free income, sometimes accommodation laid on. It sounds like from what you're saying, it's, you know, parents don't want to see people go, families don't want to see people go. But in terms of financial sense, it would seem to be make a huge amount of it.
From a financial perspective, it is very attractive to go to the likes of Dubai. Like, I think we've 8,000 school teachers out there. We're screaming for school teachers here. I think we've 8,000 school teachers in the Dubai region or the UAE. And that's not by mistake. That's because the tax breaks that they get out there, they earn tax free. Don't underestimate the cost of living. Don't underestimate. I'd often talk about golden handcuffs. Golden handcuffs are where you're in a job that you don't really like, but the salary is so good you can't leave. I would call Dubai and the UAE the golden birdcage. The whole lifestyle out there is very different. Yeah,
if you really get into that expat partying, fine dining lifestyle, you could bleed a lot of cash.
You can bleed a lot of cash, but you can very quickly get accustomed to that lifestyle and what it offers you. And it can make it difficult to come back. I've done some speaking out there and done some work out there. And what I found with it is people go out with the intention of going for a year or two. And people are staying for 13, 14 years. So don't underestimate how massive a decision it is. And I've also come across some people who have gone out for the couple of years to make the tax-free money and come home with no savings because the lifestyle was so good. Yikes. So just if you're going to do it for financial reasons, then make sure you follow that financial dream and don't get caught up with the lifestyle too much.
Okay. reasonable living expenses, as the bank might say. Owen McGee, personal finance expert, thanks very much for coming into us and sharing that. Now, still to come in the next hour, 9 ways to drastically cut your risk of getting heart disease. Preventative cardiologist Dr. Paddy Barrett will be here. Our reporter Brian O'Connell finds out if the full Irish is dropping off the menu in favour of healthier options, and the games to play to ward off boredom in the long summer holidays.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.